Blog Talk Radio.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the.
Sunday. I was actually on the show on Sunday, ran the board for them,
And it was a great time. Got to say hello to Grant Wilson from Taps, Steve and Dave Tango from Taps, Michelle Ballinger, Brian Kano, Jason Gates. A lot of different people stopped in and said hello to us. And like I said, I wasn't there in person, but I was there on the radio. And Matt and Dennis had a blast. They were cracking me up on the shows. In fact, I got a couple. This is from Saturday night. Let me find them. They caught a couple EVPs, Jody. And in the words of Dennis, these are probably the greatest EVPs of all time. So I'm going to share them with you right now. Okay. To see if you can make out what's going on here.
Okay. It puts the lotion on its skin or else it gets fucking.
What? Sounds like a bunch of jibber jabber. I didn't even make out anything.
Yeah. Of course, it is a joke.
What?
This is Matt. Matt, I won't say who he was hanging out with, just because I don't want to share that to the public. But some pretty big names in the paranormal that were at Parafest were with him at the bar afterwards, and were buying him shots. And this was about 3 o'clock in the morning in Dennis and Matt's hotel room. Dennis captured these. This is Matt. This is how bad Matt was. Let me play this one again.
It puts the lotion on his skin or else it gets fucking.
Wow.
That was the full. Yeah, and here's the second one.
It puts the lotion on the skin or else it gets the hose again.
Oh, Jesus. And Matt, like, had some picture taken of him where he had his shirt,
yeah.
Like, weird, like a chick would do. Good.
Yeah.
It puts the lotion on his skin or else it gets, fucking.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Matt was talking to me on the phone yesterday, and he's like, are you going to play that on your show? And I said, oh, yes, Jody hasn't heard him yet. And so I had to share that with you. That's how bad Matt was Saturday night.
Wow.
So Dennis actually sent him to me while we were on the air Sunday. And I played them on the show for some of the people at Parafest. Dave Tango and his dad, Bruce Tango, were just laughing their ass off listening to these.
Oh, my God.
See, Jody, you stay
yeah.
out of trouble. We got some proof of somebody else in trouble. There was lots
yes,
of spirit involved in that.
I purposely did not go to that event so I wouldn't get in trouble, you know?
Yeah.
Because,
you
know, my team members were there.
Yeah.
They were very, very bad. Very bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've already gotten some of the scoop from somebody that was there. Yep. So.
Yeah, who knows what scoop you got? We have a whole nother scoop over here.
Well, I got a little bit of a scoop from Matt on some of it, but I'm sure there's more.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
Those girls had a blast. And you know what? I'm not mad at them. But they had a good time. They went, they blew shit up, they left.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, We'll see. You know? We'll see.
Right.
Damage could come 4 months later from an event. That's how shit rolls.
It sure can.
Yep. You know how that goes. It just creeps up on you, and then you're like, what? I wasn't even there. So what?
And you have to keep an eye on the board for a minute till I get connected again. Oh, there it goes. Never mind. Finally. I lost my connection there, so. Oh.
Next week is Scarefest.
You going to that?
You know, I was planning on going.
I think you were talking about maybe going, but it's more as a spectator than, yeah.
Yeah, if I go, well, my camera guy Phil is going with his girlfriend, and I actually have a friend, you're going to like this, but we, you know, maybe in a couple weeks we'll have this friend of mine on the show. And, but I have a friend that is actually on his way back home towards me. He lives about west of me. And so he is on his way back home now, and he actually wants to go to Scarefest with me so that he could clean up some messes that he has done to me. This is a person
wow.
that has been really bad to me and came back, asked for my forgiveness, and wants to clean up some of his mess. And I might go, and if we go, we'll have a blast. And I'm not really so much worried about cleaning up messes, but I guess making new memories with them, you know?
Want to clear a conscience, you know? That's a good thing.
Yeah. He's kind of in that place in his life where, you know, sometimes you got to take a step back in life and look at, like, you know, where you've done wrong and kind of go through the motions and clear your conscience. So he wants to do that. And I don't know if we're going to go or not, so we'll see. Only time will tell. Friday may come, and I may not want to go at all. And, Friday may come, and I might be like, you know what? I'm going to make this fucking weekend my bitch, you know? So you just never know. I won't know until Friday. I go with the flow, Kevin. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. I told you wrong earlier. I'll go ahead and clear it up so that before our guest comes in. Sharon Coyle, she's actually, I told you the wrong location.
It's
a long day away.
Rolling Hills?
Yeah, she's the owner of Rolling Hills Asylum.
Yes, that's when you said her name and you said the different location,
yeah.
I thought, okay, well, maybe she's got more than one, but I knew exactly who you were talking about, and I look forward to hearing about her place tonight. It's going to be exciting.
It's a crazy place, pun not intended, but, yeah, it's highly active, and they got a lot of stuff going on, and I told her that this is something that we're doing on this show and my other show on Sundays. Every now and then we're going to dedicate a show to a location. You know, these are historical places, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, they have to do a lot of events in order to raise money to keep the place up and open, you know, and not get demolished and lose another historical place. I know this place was opened in 1827, so it's a very old location. Yeah.
Yeah.
So And you know, a lot of the paranormal shows have been there, and so it's been on television and whatnot. But I told Sharon,
yeah, it's
had a
great
reputation
for you know, our field and what it has to offer. I've heard nothing but wonderful things about the location and what it has to offer, and I've seen it a lot on TV myself. So,
right.
I don't know.
We have
Yes.
Oh, I was just going to say, we have a caller on hold, so hang on a second.
Okay. Kevin's got to go. Oh, I mean, the outlaw has to go screen that. Sorry. I've been fighting a cold.
Okay, we have Miss Sharon from Rolling Hills Asylum. Hi, Sharon.
Hey. Hi, Outlaw. Hi, Joey. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. I look forward to hearing about your place.
Oh, well, great. You're probably going to hear my dog in the background.
What's that?
And you're probably going to hear my dog whining in the background.
Aww.
Could you hear him? I'm sorry. He's a part goat, and if I don't get him a carrot, he's going to, like, be annoying the whole night.
Okay.
So I just gave him one a little while ago, but I guess it wasn't enough. Hold on. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
There.
Care
all
of
right,
your puppy. It's like your baby.
Oh, he's crazy. Like I said, he's part Billy goat.
Oh, my gosh. Dogs are crazy. I have a crazy dog.
What do you have?
I thought I was getting a Siberian Husky, and he just kind of kept growing and growing, and then, like, really bad. So I found out he was part wolf also.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he's beautiful. He's all white, and he's got light blue eyes. He's
gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's beautiful, but he is so badly behaved, so, like, oh, I have to keep an eye on him. He's like
a
kid.
You need to be alpha. You have to be alpha.
Yeah, I'm too sweet to him. I spoil him.
I'm the same way. I spoil him. He's terrible. He's my baby.
Yeah.
He has to be very well trained, obviously.
Yeah, right? They train us.
Yep.
No, you're going to take this and you're going to like it.
Yeah.
More like, but I'm really sick of cleaning that up.
So funny.
Yeah. So, I know, you know, I heard so much about your place. It's got a great reputation. But, you know, I don't really know much about the history. So could you just kind of give us, like, a brush up on the building and what it was used for at one time?
Sure. It actually opened up January 1st, 1827 as the Genesee County Courthouse. And it housed everybody. It was like I hate to use the word dumping ground, but it was really just like a hodgepodge of society would come and live there. It was for the elderly, for the widows and orphans, Civil War veterans, Native Americans, mentally disabled, physically disabled, all sorts of people would come and live there. And they even had some criminals that ended up having to get committed, if you will, there. And it was a self-sustaining community. All the people that lived there were referred to as inmates, and all the inmates worked the farm. As long as you could do something, you didn't have to have your faculties, but if you could sweep the broom even, everyone worked the farm. So it helped keep the cost down, and of course they grew all their own vegetables and their fruits and their crops and their cattle and their chickens and eggs and made their own bread and butter and everything. So they were very self-sustainable, and they stayed this way for well over 10-15 years, and then they added in 1938 the Genesee County Infirmary, the hospital for the area, and it was actually built as the first fireproof facility of the area in the state. So that was kind of interesting. And then from 1938 to 1958, there really wasn't anything going on, any new changes until 1958 when the men's dorm burned down, the wooden structure And they built the long, massive east wing that everyone sees where Shadow Hallway is in now. And in 64, we went underneath another change and became the Genesee County Nursing Home. And then they closed it down in 74, and then we went underneath a succession of three private owners, all lasting 10 years, and I'm the fourth private owner in my third and a half year.
Wow.
Wow. So it was an asylum at one time?
Asylum is kind of a catch-all term. They house everyone, all types of people, and so it was never a full-on asylum, but they did have mentally disabled people there. They did have tuberculosis patients there. So at one point, around the 90s or so, the previous owner had created Rolling Hills Country Mall, the owner previous to me. And then when they discovered that it was haunted, they named it Rolling Hills Insane Asylum. And then when I took it over, I really wanted to revert back to the original name of the Genesee County Poorhouse, which is what it really was. But unfortunately, in the paranormal people already knew it as Rolling Hills. I dropped the word insane because it really wasn't a full-on insane asylum. But asylum, by definition, means safe harbor. So I thought, you know, that's kind of what it was. When it was a poorhouse, it was a safe harbor. When it was a hospital, it was a safe harbor. So I thought that was best to keep it Rolling Hills Asylum.
Yeah, it kind of started off on, you know, providing for the needy. So
exactly.
Yeah.
So and I was just going to add on that, being that it was opened in 1827, you know, there's layers on layers on layers of history, you know, of the buildings in that property. So, you know, there's lots of things going on there spiritually.
Oh, yeah. Even before then, there was Native American land. It was originally Native American land. And then before 1827, there was a stagecoach stop and a tavern out here. And at one point, even before the full-on corn farm opened up, there was a cobblestone building where they did house, as they used to say, lunatics. So, I mean, there were different layers, as you said, and thousands, hundreds, if not thousands, of deaths. There's only 1,700 that are documented, but, I mean, over the course of 300 years, there had to have been a lot more than 1,700 people dying. So, I mean, there's layers upon layers, like you said.
Yeah.
So what are the claims in the building?
Oh, gosh. There's so many things that happen. Oh, my God, I can't. Oh, my God. Well, we're now into the Class A EVPs. What's really interesting, and I've been in the paranormal for a very long time and lived in California and had, you know, a group of three and a public group of 250 people. And it was just, I've been doing this for a while, but Rolling Hills is kind of unique in my experience that overwhelmingly the majority of the activity is intelligent haunting. They will comment and pick on people and make fun of you and wish you happy birthday, and it's very much an intelligent haunting, and it's very amazing. So you get a lot of Class A intelligent responses. Of course, you know, the typical flashlight activity, tons of shadow people, more and more full body apparitions, disembodied voices, the screaming lady, which is just blood curdling and very mysterious. Flashes of light that look like strobe lights, but they just appear. It goes on and on and on. It's different every day. Doors opening and closing. Sometimes in front of you, which is kind of surprising. There's this noise that the building makes, or I don't even say what the building. It's the spirits. When they're getting really crowded around you and they want to make their presence known, they'll sometimes respond in a way where the only way I can describe it is if the Jolly Green Giant stood at the foot of the side of a ranch house and had one hand on one side and one hand on the other and twisted and snapped the building and it makes this big boom crack noise. When the spirits get really close around and they want to start interacting with you, they'll make that noise. And the kicker is you can ask them to make the noise and they'll do it again. So it's not the building shuttle, but anyway, no way. So... It's really interesting. I had some really interesting teams that have been coming through lately that very well-established teams, and their eyes get big as saucers, and they come up and they're into the green room, which is kind of like our main common area for everybody to hang out in. And their eyes are big, their mouth is open, and they can't believe what they heard or they saw. I mean, they've never seen stuff like this.
Go ahead, Jody.
I was going to ask, for people, like, listening and stuff, like, what are the prices to rent out the place for teams?
It really varies. There are different price points. I mean, if you want to do a public hunt, it can be as low as $35 a person. If you want to do a private hunt, if you can do a midweek, it's less expensive. It's averaging about $675 for a midweek. Weekends are higher. You know, Friday or Saturdays tend to be higher. It really, it's different every. You have to look at the calendar, see what's available. October is completely different. But the average for a Friday or Saturday is about $1,050 for 10 people for 9 hours.
How much? I'm sorry?
$1,050 for 10 people.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Public hunt, you know, $8, public hunt, $55. I mean, it's very affordable.
Yeah.
Definitely. How big is the area? How many buildings and whatnot? I bet it covers a lot of ground.
Well, the buildings are all connected. There's like three, but they're all connected. It's 54,000 square feet, and plus we have the tunnel underground. So it's really large. The long east wing has three floors. The west wing has four floors, plus the tunnel, plus the laundry room. So it's really pretty spread out.
Yeah. Wow. Now, in the time that you've taken over, have you kind of gotten used to being a paranormal investigator yourself? Have you kind of gotten used to the activity when you're there all the time?
Used to meaning what?
Used to the activity going on around you, or do they not mess with you as much per se as the people that come in there? You know, when you're in the building alone.
I still get interactions with them when I go through the building even by myself. I mean, I'll get interactions. It's hard to say if they mess with me. They mess with me all the time, but not in a bad way. I mean, like, I was in the green room, like, for the common area room, and, we've done the tour, and people were off investigating, and I was folding T-shirts. And the mail meter was going off. I had my recorder out. I just, there's always someone hanging out in the room with me, at least one person. So I'm folding the T-shirts. I'm doing my thing. And I play it back later. And I had coughed. I had a little tickle in my throat. I coughed. And then coming from across the room, you can hear somebody making fun of me going like that. And then all of a sudden, I'm hearing some talking. I can't quite make it out. And it's like a couple people talking back and forth. And all of a sudden, you hear a man go, touch her now. So they're just picking up. Picking on me, they're family. I'm family. They're family.
Yeah.
They're just picking on me, But overall, I'm used to it in a way where, I'll be in the building and we'll be doing, there'll be investigators in there and they'll be like, oh my god, I've never heard that before. Oh my god, and after a while, they're looking at me like, Sharon, you're not even surprised by any of this, it's just the average, Thursday night. What do you want me to say? Or it's kind of a quiet Friday night. I mean, look at us. You're normally even more excited than this, whatever. I know it sounds really like I'm being blasé about it, but I've been to a lot of places. Like I said, I had a group of 250 people in California, a meetup group, and I had my private team, and I've been to a lot of places, Dan. And for me to give up living a mile from the beach in Huntington Beach, California, in a beautiful townhome with cherry cabinets and granite countertops and, the pool and the hot tub and the complex and the whole nine yards, to come and live here in the nook of the north winter in one room with plywood floors and no kitchen cabinets, and I found out a bathroom door last year after 2.5 years and then ran out of water for 12 days, and I finally got a closet built last year after living out of suitcases for 2.5 years. This place must be incredible, and it is. Or else I'm going to give all that up.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You know, I mean, I'm living like worse than a college student.
And loving it.
Well, I am. I am loving it, except, you know, December's coming and the winter's coming and I'm going to be miserable and probably going to the Shining Way. So people are better be checking in on me. That's all I'm saying, because I hate the winter. I hate the winter more than being fat. I hate being fat. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, so, like, over the winter, is there less groups coming in and less things going on there? Or do you still, like, keep it pretty busy?
I have to be open because bills don't stop. I mean, just because it's winter, the bank goes, oh, geez, Sharon, you get a pass for 4 months until the weather stops. You know, that doesn't happen, unfortunately. You know, the mortgage and the insurance and everything is still going strong. So I'm still open. Yeah. We still do hunts. They're shorter hours. You got to dress like you're outside, like you're going to go snowmobiling, and you go out for, you know, 45 minutes or an hour, and you come into the green room, you warm up, you have coffee, you go back out. Activity level's still really high. You know, I mean, do I have as many groups in? Of course not. I mean, you know, people aren't stupid. Yeah. The people who can even take the cold out, I can't. I can't. I hate the cold. I look like Randy from The Christmas Story. I could bounce down 4 flights of stairs and wouldn't feel the damn thing because there's so much long underwear on. But, you know, I have to do what I have to do, you know. And I think it's better for the spirits. I know that the previous owner used to close down in the winter, and that was like 4 or 5 months of them being left alone. I mean, they're used to people being in there, you know, on almost a daily basis. And so when if someone were just to, like, abruptly walk away and not be around for 4 or 5 months, it's like leaving your dog home alone for a week, you know, when he's used to you being with him every day. It's hard on them.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, and so what, you know, every place has what they call their predominant spirits that, you know, every team seems to catch this person on their EVP recorder or communicate with them. What are some of the predominant ones there that a lot of people capture communicating with them? Or is it always somebody different?
Well, it's a mixture of both. We get a lot of the regulars, of course, and then there's so many people. Like those guys in the green room, they don't tell me who they are. They just blab. Like, hey, touch her now, or whatever. There's a lot of stuff like that where people are talking and you never know who they are. But the regular, I don't want to say cast characters, but, you know, they're my family, so I can call them that. There's Roy, our 7.5-foot shadow man. He's very prominent in the building. We've got Nurse Emma. There's a little boy named Jack. He kind of looks like Pugsley on the Adams family. We've gotten pictures of him. He wears really short, bare feet in a horizontal striped shirt. He's pretty funny. He'll say boo out loud, and he'll give the ladies wet willies in the ear. And he's full of spit and vinegar, you know. And then you got Elizabeth in the chapel. She's a little blonde hair, pigtail little girl. And she has a little teeny tiny little voice, and she usually likes to follow men around. I think she's missing her dad, and so she follows, like, you know, she'll find a man that she really looks up to and wants to be with him and follow them around. Or she'll giggle out loud if you talk about my dog. She likes Tiki quite a bit. I mean, there's Raymond in the boiler room. I mean, there's so many. I mean, there's George.
Yeah.
There's a lot of regulars, but, you know, like I said, there's so many people that just jibber-jabber all the time, or they'll make comments. A funny story I always like to tell people when we're doing the tours, we have a classroom. It wasn't really a classroom. I dressed it as one when I was working with the Blues Brothers when we were filming The Haunted Boy. And we needed a classroom, and I left it set up because it kind of fit the room. It felt comfortable, and like it fits there. And we get a lot of activity. Well, one of my volunteers went in there one day, one night actually, with her mother. And it was her mother's birthday. And on the desk, on the teacher's desk, there's a little antique, old little quiz book. And so my volunteer was quizzing her mom. And, you know, one of the questions was, who is Booker T. Washington? And the mother didn't know. She said, oh, isn't he a peanut farmer? And the answer was no, he was an educator. They got an EVP of some woman called saying, what an idiot. You know? I mean, That's
great.
I was going to say her mother isn't smarter than a fifth grader, sadly, but that's okay. But yeah, I mean, that's
I love it when you find a location.
They pivot in on stuff.
It's great when they correct people. You know. Yeah.
There was this one couple that came in, and they had never investigated before. And they had come, like, on a detain, which was a four-hour thing. And so we did the hour-and-a-half tour, and they could go off and explore on their own. And they didn't really bring anything. They had a mag light, and that was a camera. That was it. They barely even had the camera. I swear to God. They barely had the camera. And I said, well, oh, my God, we don't have a recorder, because, I mean, we're known for the CVPs. And the guy had the old flip phones that had a recording capability of, like, 3 or 4 minutes. That was it. And I'm like, oh, great, you're going to need another 2.5 hours, and you have 4 minutes. That's it. So I'm like, oh, I hope to God he gets something. So it happened to be their anniversary, I think the next day, or it was that night or the next day. So they went up to Shadow Hallway, and I said, well, try it up here. You know, you're plugging up, good luck up here. Try it up here. Maybe they'll wish you happy anniversary. Tell them it's your anniversary. So they went off, and they started taking pictures and doing their thing. They came back after a little while. They said they went up to Shadow Hallway. They sat down. And they said, it's our anniversary, whatever it was, tomorrow, whatever. So someone came over and wished them happy anniversary. And someone came over and said, happy anniversary, like that. They whispered it. And it was amazing. And they were, like, so thrilled. They were beaming from ear to ear. There were a couple, like, in their late 50s, early 60s. And they didn't even think they'd ever have any experience, ever. And they were, like, dancing on the scene. But that was really cool.
Wow.
So how long have you owned it? You said for 3.5 years.
I bought it the day before my birthday, October 25th, in 2009.
Wow.
Wow, that was
so a long time. How did you see yourself doing this? I'm sorry? There were two of you talking at once. I think I heard Outlaw say it was a great birthday present. It was the biggest birthday and most expensive birthday present I ever bought myself. So... I didn't hear what you said. Sorry.
I asked how long you planned on doing it. Like,
till I die?
Yeah.
I mean, I have no thoughts of going anywhere. This is my home.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I live here.
That's
my
awesome.
Home. I mean, I gave up everything for this.
Yeah.
I mean, everything. People really have a misconception on what it's like to own a property like this. You don't do it to make money because you don't make money. You don't make money. It's a constant uphill battle financially,
yeah.
Constant repairs. You know, I mean, it's constant. I mean, the windows are literally, you touch one of the window panes and it falls out. All the windows need to be re-caulked, and there are hundreds of windows and window panes in there, thousands probably. The flat roofs need to be repaired. The gutters need to be repaired. The downspouts have been stolen, so I have no downspouts. And all that rain is hitting against the brick and causing damage to the grout in the brick. I mean, it's constant money out of pocket. I mean, if I'm living in one room and barely have a bathroom door and don't have any kitchen cabinets, which I'm not joking about, I really don't. And, you know, I live in one room. Everything goes 100% back into that building, and I'm living like a pauper myself. Perfect place for me,
mm-hmm.
huh? But, I mean, if people don't get in, you don't make money in these situations. People think that you make money hand over fist, you don't. Insurance, electric bill, my electric bill, and I keep on very little lights. The emergency exit lights, the one room where we have the common area that has coffee and the lights in there, the outside lights for security, and my bill is $350 a month, and that's just for the building, not for house. So people don't
have you ever thought about doing like a Kickstarter for like certain projects for the property?
I actually did a fundraiser. It was a Kickstarter. It was the other one. I can't think of it now. This show, and I can't think what the other one was. But I did one about 2 years ago, and I raised only. I shouldn't say only, but I raised about $1,500, which came in extremely handy when last year a roofing company out of Massachusetts, Chidluco Corporation, took complete pity on me and the slate roof of the infirmary that had gaping holes, some of them as big as 8 feet by 8 feet, And he donated his crew's time. He and his crew's time drove up from Massachusetts and spent 2 days here repairing the slate roof last September.
That's wonderful.
And it is. And thank God I had the $1,500 to pay for the supplies. And otherwise, last winter I probably would have lost the building.
Well, I hope more of that comes into play for you so that, you know, because there's nothing more beautiful than, you know, buying a property like that and actually getting to see it get better and better, you know.
And when I first got here, there was so much garbage in every room, piled mass high in every single room, everywhere. I can't even tell you. You would not believe the photos if I showed them to you. The first year was about 7 tons of garbage. Last year, 2 40-foot dumpsters, and 30-foot dumpsters. This year, and I have another one 3/4 full. And I don't throw away anything. It was pure garbage. I mean, I'm talking there were boxes and boxes of pizza, empty pizza containers, and Girl Scout cookies eaten through by rats, and Halloween candy eaten through by rats. And in the first year, I handled more with gloves, obviously, but rat poop and pigeon poop and God knows what kind of poop. And all kinds of disgusting things that it just was unbelievable. I had never seen such – they were using it like an inside dump. It was horrible. Horrible.
Yeah.
And now we've got, you know, you can sit on every floor, on the floor. We've got rooms dressed, some authentically, some not. But they're still, you know, they're inviting, and you can sit down and help evoke activity, and the investigators enjoy it, and the spirits enjoy it. And, you know, it's just, it makes a huge difference, you know. Who wants to be in a dirty environment? Nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's also good hard work and therapy. Like, I don't know, I find that kind of work therapeutic, you know, taking something and cleaning it and, like, knowing that you put your, you know, your hard work into it to make it look better.
Well, and I couldn't have done it without the, you know, my volunteers. But, you know, they become my family, and they have my back, and most of them have been here for close to 3 years with me, and we're a tight-knit group of people. And so, I mean, they're firemen and they're pharmacists and sheriffs and nurses and hotel managers, and they're amazing people. And I'm sure a lot of people that have noticed on the website and heard, we just lost one of our volunteers who's a federal marshal about a week ago, and that was really difficult for all of us. It's been a great loss. Jason Jewett did a lot of wonderful things. He was a good man, and we miss him terribly.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, people don't realize, you know, for one of these locations to function like this, you got to have a lot of volunteers to come in and dedicate their time to helping out, because it's not like, like you said earlier, it's not like you have a whole heap of money to pay people. So, you know, they have to volunteer their time to help out, you know?
Exactly. And I have about 20 on my core volunteer page, on my core group. We have about 20 people. And they're all related.
Uh-huh.
Most of them are all related. They're all family members of each other. So we have pockets of families, brothers, you know, wives, husbands, mothers, fathers. So it's really great. We have pockets of families that are volunteering here.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, I see a lot of places that I go to, they're struggling. I just spoke with another location that I go to often, and just, you know, checking in, see how she's doing, and she said that sales have been real bad, and, you know, she's, like, maybe thinking about shutting it down.
Well, it's not what people think. It's very, very difficult. And what I'm hearing by, and I'm going to make up a percentage, I really don't know. I haven't done the statistics, but I'm going to pull a number out of the hat. I'm going to say around 15 to 20% of paranormal groups out there will say that they don't want to go to a public haunted location to investigate. They only do private homes. And I think they're missing a huge opportunity. Now, whether they go to my location or another public location, they're missing a huge opportunity. First of all, it's verifiable that it's haunted. So you can test out new equipment. You can test out new theories. You can train your investigators in a location that is already established. You don't want to bring new investigators into someone's home and have them run out screaming because they're freaking out or just not knowing how to use the equipment at the very least. And so for people to say that they don't want to spend the money on public haunts, like we're a piece of dirt, is really insulting, and they're missing a huge opportunity. Not only are they helping to save historical property, they're wasting opportunity to train their team and advance their research in a dedicated area that's already established.
I only do commercial places for the most part, unless I'm like scouting out a new place and it hasn't been done. But I don't do like residents. I don't really like. I don't personally feel comfortable going into people's homes and opening stuff up. I say let the people who claim to be those professionals do that. You know, I enjoy going to the places that have a great history behind it. You're walking in a building that has intense history there, and you're learning it. And to me, that is so much more rewarding than going into somebody's home and hearing, about what's going on in the home. Obviously that is history in that home, but, these buildings are big, and they just have a stronger history that is much more fascinating to me.
And they're beautiful. They're beautiful
they
in all in their own way. Even prisons and print houses or factories, they're gorgeous. They're beautiful.
I walk in and it's like disgusting. And I've taken people who don't go ghost hunting, and they're like, why do you want to hang out in this? And it's like, this is beautiful, okay? I tell them this is beautiful. And I don't care that there's rocks, or I might come out with like black on my face from getting all dirty. I look past it. I fish in it when it was original, when it was in good standing, and visualize that, focus on who was there during that time, I don't know.
I know.
I think you're lucky, and I think you are living the life, even if you're struggling and going, oh, shit, I need, like, all new windows in this place. You know what? One of these days, like, a miracle is just going to happen for you. And the universe is going to say, it will. I believe it will.
Your words to the universe, I hope so. Your mouth to the universe, because, it's tough there. I hate to say this, because it's going to sound like me saying, oh, poor me. I mean, literally, there's stretches of time, long stretches of time, and thank God I'm like a polar bear and it doesn't matter, I can draw my own fat. There are times, literally, a week at a time, 2 weeks at a time, I might not have any food in my refrigerator. Like, it's there, because I can't afford to go shopping. I mean, I'm living on like a can of soup, and that's just the way it is. I mean, luckily, I've got weight to lose, so hey, it's all good, it's my own diet. But I love this place, and it was such an overwhelming, I can't even verbalize it, an overwhelming need to have this place. I mean, it was a compulsion. There was like no in it. I mean, there was just no way I'm not going to be. I have to have this place. And I really think it ticked me. I was here in 2008 on a Darkness Radio Jason and Grant event, and I think at that point in time, for whatever reason, they picked me because I was getting astronomical amount of evidence. Full body apparitions and photographs of Roy and all these amazing giant hands that were manifesting and tons of stuff. And like I said, I've been doing this for a while. I was trained at Children's Team America about 6 years, Linda Vista Hospital, which I know you've been to. I had full body apparitions walking into walls at Linda Vista. I mean, this place, I think, can pick me. because I literally had to have it. I mean, it was like, it was just, if I would have thought about it logically, I would have ran to the hills. I know what,
you know, I have a place that, like, I want so bad. And so I know what you're saying. And, you know, like, even the owners, like, approached me, and they were like, Jody, buy it. And I'm like, I want to. And, like, I have a way that I could possibly get it. But I'm kind of like, you know, at the same time, it's like, you know, you got to know what you're getting into. You're getting into, yeah, I got to replace all the windows. You know, this needs to be done. That needs to be done. It's not a joke, you know?
You can. I haven't had a haircut in a year and a half. I was trimming my own hair. I've never done that in my whole life. You know? So, I mean,
yeah.
I don't know much about you. I've seen a couple of your pictures and stuff. You're going to have to be prepared to change your whole lifestyle. Like, your nails, forget about it. You know? I mean, literally.
See, I just wouldn't give that up.
Give away.
I would, like, create my own goddamn salon.
That's what I'm saying. You know, seriously, you have to be prepared to change your lifestyle 1,000%. 1,000%.
Right, and I'm not ready for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a fun situation sometimes, and your time is not your own. I wanted to go to Parafest in Pennsylvania this weekend in the worst way. I haven't been outside of Rolling Hills to another event, other than I popped over to Mavaria last year when Lauren was having a fundraiser for a girl with cystic fibrosis for one day. But honestly, I used to be able to go to all the Darkness Radio events all the time. And I have not been able to, and I couldn't get out of here because it just couldn't happen. I couldn't get enough people to cover me and everything else. And the bottom line is everything falls on my shoulders. Falls on my shoulders. So you have to be prepared for that. It's a 7-day-a-week, 24-hour-a-day job. And it's not just doing the hunts, the tours, and the maintenance. It's doing the website. It's doing the sales, the marketing, the phone calls. You know, it's worrying about everything. It's constant, 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 constant.
Now, do you let people have events there?
I don't let people have events there, but if they want to rent out the building, absolutely they can.
Nice.
You know, I mean, I wish I could, you know, graciously donate. Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean it like that. Like, people are allowed to have events there and open to the public.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. We had a wedding here.
And how do you... What's that?
We had a wedding there this summer.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. And then all the bridal party, we have two caskets. The bridal party, we're all sitting around the casket while the groom was in the casket, and then the bride got in the casket with the groom, and it was amazing. It was fabulous. It was absolutely fabulous. It was a red and black wedding, and it was a pagan wedding outside with a beautiful arch of flowers, and it was lovely. And then, like I said, then we went through the building, and they took all their wedding pictures in the peely, crackly paint. Oh, it was awesome. It was fantastic.
Wow. You should do a zombie wedding.
I can do whatever they want.
Yeah, that would be fun.
I have resources for everything. I have resources to reverse clubs. I have resources to a ton of zombies that do this all the time. I mean, I have resources for everything. I can pretty much make whatever happen, depending on their budget.
Yeah. So how many events, do you have like a lot of events coming up?
No, events are very expensive. That's another, you know, I've been doing events for a lot of years, but my background was originally about 15, 18 years in the film business as a location manager for commercials, television, some films, and doing wardrobe for them as well over the course of that time period. Then I worked for the March of Dimes in the United Way as a fundraiser and event planner, and then I went into trade shows, international trade shows for the OEM market, medical device industry, packaging industry, plastic industry. And so I've been doing events for a long time. People don't understand the cost behind events either. You know, when you start doing events, you got to figure in the speaker fees, the airfare, the hotel, all your marketing dollars. There's a lot to it. And it's not necessarily a cost-effective way to go. Unless you have $20,000 laying around to cover all your expenses right off the top, you know, a lot of the A-list celebrities get a pretty good chunk of change. and you have to pay it up front. So I don't have that kind of money laying around. If I had that kind of money laying around, I would certainly have had a bathroom door a lot longer, a lot earlier than I did, you know. So, you know, it's not that easy. I mean, if people want to rent it out and have events here, absolutely. I mean, we have a small event at the end of August, Paracus. George Lopez, I think you know George.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know George. I love my George. George was my very first attendee when I first opened up in 2010. So he was here. We had John Tobin, Lorna Reynolds, Robin Marie, Russ Diver. We had Paranormal Crossroads Live, Glenn Hall, Ghost Detectives. It was a great little event. It was a nice event. It was, you know, it wasn't super big. All the, I was really glad. Oh, Daniel Hooven and I forgot, Jesus Christ, I'm forgetting people. Daniel Hooven and Tina Storer from TXT, which, oh my God, I was going to forget those two. But it was a really great event, and everybody was sending me emails afterwards saying it was probably one of the most fun events they had, the most enjoyable. Everyone got along, there was no drama. The foot traffic was always good, the conferences were well attended, the Lauren's gallery readings were well. It was a nice event. It was a nice time. It wasn't like, you know, we didn't have, like, you know, 500 people here, but it was a really, it went well. It went well. Everyone was happy, and that was important. So.
Nice. Well, hopefully, you know, you get more events, and, you know, I just hope that something breaks, and somewhere along the line, you know, somebody says, hey, you know, she needs a break. She needs new windows or, you know, it's really sad that our government doesn't help out more with certain buildings like that.
Unfortunately, with the state of the economy, I can totally understand that. You know, and that's another thing. People think, oh, geez, you know, why don't you get grants? And, again, people don't realize the ins and outs of all of this. Getting a grant is not like all of a sudden, you know, you're on the National Register, Historical Register, you're a nonprofit, and boom, you can put in some paperwork and they're going to hand you a bucket of money. That's not how it goes. First of all, you know, if you're a nonprofit and you're qualified to apply for grants, the paperwork alone is daunting. I mean, it can be 150 to 200 pages long. And, for example, the windows, you're talking about the windows. If I wanted to get the windows repaired, and I had three estimates, and the average cost to repair the windows, hypothetically, I'm just throwing a number out, haven't done it, let's just say $100,000. When I send in that paperwork for that application to be considered for a grant, I have to prove that I have half that money in the bank. So I have to have $50,000 sitting in the bank before they even look at my application to give me a grant for the rest of the money. You have to have half the money. People think that you just, oh, you can apply for grants. They shovel, you know, barrels of money at you. You have to have money. It's like the old adage. You have to have money to make money. And unfortunately, people don't understand that until you get into it and you start looking into it. And it's kind of disheartening. It really is.
And those windows would have to be restored to original. You can't go out and just get brand new. So you would have to have, like, a certain type of company working to restore the actual windows on the building.
Right.
So that's
a pain in the ass. The windows that are broken, you have to either get old glass or, you know, replica glass that looks antique, which is going to triple the cost of everything. But that's just an example.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really unfortunate that, you know, a lot of the people out there really just don't understand the nature of it. And you know, it would be nice if it was different. It really would, but it isn't. And so we are dependent. All the locations out there are really dependent on the foot traffic and the support of the paranormal teams out there. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful locations. And, you know, some of them are bigger, and they do. They are nonprofit, and they are getting some grants here and there, or they live closer to a major city where they get more general traffic. Rolling Hills is 45 minutes from Rochester and Buffalo, either direction. So we're not really on top, like, next door, 5 minutes away. We're not far away, but we're not on top of a city. Like, Waverly Hills is 10 minutes from Lexington. So they get a lot of traffic. They get a lot of traffic from Lexington. I'm not that lucky, you know. I mean, I was out in the middle of the country because we were a poorhouse. They moved, you know, they didn't want anybody near them. And, you know, so that's the nature of the beast. So, but, you know, I love it. I don't regret a minute of it at all. I mean, I would think that I did, but I don't. I've met a lot of amazing people, accomplished a lot of great things, experienced a lot of head-scratching moments. And it's been amazing. It really has. And I don't foresee me doing anything different. I mean, would it be easier if I left the building and went and got a full-time job with insurance? Hell yeah. 40-hour week?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. You know,
so, you know, it's almost like, you know, listening to your background, it's almost like you were preparing yourself. Your life was preparing yourself for this, the things that you did.
I know.
You're still doing, but in your own organization, and you're your own boss. And that's what makes it rewarding and worth it to you. Because
isn't it kind of odd, though? I always think about that, too. That it's like all my experience throughout my lifetime led up to here. And it's very,
yeah.
I mean, it's very unusual. It's an unusual situation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're still dealing with people coming in and filming. You're creating events, and, you know, you're running almost like the same show, but it's your show.
You want to hear something really odd, TJ?
Mm-hmm.
After I bought the place, I learned about a couple of the owners. One of the first private owners, Cecil, has a daughter, or had a daughter, he's passed away, had a daughter named Sharon, born in 1961. I'm Sharon, and I'm born in 1961. The second owner ended up opening a horse-drawn carriage museum. Well, my dad, growing up, owned the sporting goods store, and then when he retired, he started to build horse-drawn carriages and buggies. Just bizarre. Bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
well,
the parallel of my life.
Oh, I was just going to tell Sharon, when you're talking about that, it popped in my head because I have friends that own different locations, and it almost seems like the location picks who is going to be the owner.
Oh, it picks who wants here. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, we say that all the time. My key volunteers and I, we say this all the time. The building picks who it wants here. It will, not to be rude, but it will spit out the people that are not supposed to be volunteers here, and I don't mean it like that. That's really harsh. But it really does pick who it wants here. It brings people that it needs here or that will work together well or somehow are connected to each other and they don't even know it. It's very interesting living here, what your eyes open up to. And I've heard, I totally believe what you said. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
now,
I was going to ask something, and then I totally forgot.
Oh, that's because I talked to you.
Oh, I know.
No, I know.
But go ahead, Kevin.
I was just going to ask, dealing with owning a location, I'm sure in the short period of time that you've had it, dealing with the public can be tricky sometimes because some people that come into your building don't respect it like they should. You know, they do things that they're not supposed to do leave trash or whatever it might be that, you know, is not good.
Statement or question? Is that a statement or a question?
That is a good question.
I was getting around. Oh, it's been a
long
time.
You're shit. That's what you are. You're shit.
Were you making it was not a real statement, or were you asking me that?
Every location has had their people come in that have not been polite. That won't be
right.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Let me put it this way. If you've ever heard anything negative about me, it's probably from the people that have done something bad in my building. And that's the only time.
You know what? That's how the world works, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's the only time I'm nasty, is if you're doing something so terrible that I'm going to lose. I'm a Scorpio. I shouldn't have to say anything more about that, but I'm a Scorpio. So, you know, and I'm very protective. I mean, this is my home. I mean, the building, even though I don't live in the main building, this whole property is my home. I've had, and I want to be very blunt. I'm going to tell you some things that are probably make your hair curl. And Jody, I can't tell you how many women have given our sex a bad name. I've had women come up to me and say, and my porta potty, by the way, is one of the cleanest porta potties you'll ever be in. Everyone else says, I can't believe how great it smells. It's clean, it's clean. I've had people come up to me, women. I don't want to use the porta potty. Can I pee in your driveway? I'm not kidding you. Or they don't want to sit down, even though it's clean. If they're putting down toilet paper, they will straddle and urinate everywhere. So the next person that goes in, guess what? It's all over the bottom of their pant legs. It's everywhere. It's usually women. And I think that's horrible. Horrible. So will that make me lose my mind? Yeah, especially when my 74-year-old neighbor who's coming over to volunteer has to go out to go to the bathroom and she sits in urine and she has to go home at midnight and take a shower. Yeah, you're going to hear something from me. Absolutely. And you're not going to like. You know?
Hey, you know what?
If you're standing in front of me.
I have no problem with a woman being strong. I think that is a great quality. You have to, that's yours. You got to, you know. You're letting people in. You're opening it up to them. And if people were being disrespectful in my home, they'd hear it from me, too.
Just treat it like you would treat any other location that you would go to. Like, if you were in a library, would you pee all over the library bathroom? No. You know, come on. You know, or, I give a whole spiel when I'm checking people in about, you know, no outside food or beverage or whatever. I've had people look at me, drink their water, and whip it across the lawn in front of me. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This isn't Walmart parking lot.
Now, do you have rules in the building about, like, things that you don't allow? Like, some locations, they don't want a Ouija board or, they don't really like.
Yep, it's all on the website, in the rules and regulations. It's on the registration form they have to fill out on the website. So, yeah. Everybody's well aware of that. I also go over it again verbally before people come in the door. I had a group, and I won't name names, but a week and a half ago, kicked in a door that was locked. It had not been open. It had not been open. I was there in 2008, and the other side of the door, where this room that is closed off, was actually all paneled, the paneling, when I was there in 2008. When I bought the building, it was still paneled up. So it had not been open for at least since 2008, probably since 2004.
Right.
Somebody decided they had to kick in that door. Are you kidding me? Really?
Yeah, like
you
what the hell?
You have 54,000 square feet of space. And that one door bugged you so much you had to kick it in? You know, I'm like, come on. So, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Who do you think is going to have to fix it? Where do you think the money is going to come to have to fix it? I haven't raised my hunt prices since I've been here. None of them. I haven't raised them at all. And I'm less expensive than most of the major locations, you know. But if things continue like this, I will have to raise the prices to compensate for all the costs. I have to hire a handyman. Let's just think about it, people, before you do something. On the other hand, I have beautiful teams that come in that have been nothing but unbelievable. Said lovely things, had an amazing time, have come 5 and 6 hours away multiple times, like over the course of the last, 3.5 years, 8, 10, 12. I have one group that has come 20 times from 5 hours away, you know? And they have my back, and they're just very lovely, and they respect the building, and I had a group that felt bad for me one day because I hadn't had a chance to eat, and I must have posted something on Facebook. Oh, I'm running late. I don't even have a chance to grab a sandwich, and they brought me a plate of food. I mean, lovely people. So I don't want to just bash on the bad people. 95% of the people come through the door late. They really are. They're wonderful people. They want to be there. They're enthusiastic. Newbies, skeptics, 95% of the people are great. It's just that 25% that you're going to have anywhere, wherever you go, if you work in an office or a hospital or wherever you are, go to college, you're going to have a percentage of people that are just not so nice. That's just the way it is. The way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Trust me. I know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So have you ever heard of No, go ahead. I'll say it again in a minute. Go ahead. I interrupted Kevin.
Oh, it's fine. I lost it. Go ahead.
Oh, I feel bad.
No, you're fine. I'll get it in a second.
No, I was just going to ask if you guys heard about our board and our suit and our board.
No.
I hung up a suit in the morgue. We hung it up actually probably a couple of years ago during one of our Halloween events. And I decided to leave it up. I figured if they were prepping a body, they would have a suit laying in there. Well, we've discovered a couple of really interesting things. The spirits like to use the suit as a pendulum, and you can literally go down there and ask it to swing with the suit tie, with the tie facing one direction for yes and one direction for no. It'll also follow you around with the tie facing you, like if you walk around the room, or it will take turns turning to the person asking questions, like it's looking at you. And when it's all done communicating, whoever is down there will turn the back of the suit to you, like, I'm done, you can leave now. People cannot believe it. It's really phenomenal. We also have someone who speaks full-on Italian and will correct your pronunciation and your dialect.
Wow.
And it's all verifiable. I mean, this has been just pretty amazing. People have come up to me and said they've never seen anything like it. Other locations have had teams here, major locations, and they've said, we've never seen anything like it. So it's pretty special. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was, now you just jarred what I was going to ask. What's some of the... I wouldn't say craziest, but I'll just say it anyway. What's the craziest kind of activity that you've seen since you've been there, whether it's when you're there alone or when somebody's there investigating? What are some of the things that you've seen that, besides what you just talked about, that have occurred that you're just like, holy crap, you know?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of things. We've seen full-on solid. People walking around the building, like coming up the ramp when we're in Chattel Hallway, going up to the infirmary, coming back down the stairs, going back down the ramp, and we're swearing it's people, and there's nobody. I mean, because we're all sitting together. George, you should talk to George Lopez when he was here a couple weeks ago. He and Bobby, Katie, and Kathy Christopher, and it was Kathy, Bob, George, me, and a couple of my volunteers, and we were in Chattel Hallway, and we were getting tons of activity, and it got to the point where we started hearing a lot of voices, and both Bob and George kept saying, are you sure there's no one in the building? Where's Leslie's been? There's no one in the building. No one in the building. So we're all standing in the hallway, and we're slowly walking down closer, trying to get a better hear if it's coming from the infirmary or down the ramp. All of a sudden, George bolts down the hallway and down two flights of stairs to the outside door. And we're just all standing there. I mean, we're not even running after the poor guy, you know. He was running not like he was running afraid. He was running like he was chasing, like somebody was in the building. And I knew there was nobody in the building. And unfortunately, none of us even went to back him up. It just became awful. But he came back upstairs, and he was like, you're not going to believe what I saw. And he demonstrated what he saw. And what he saw was he got down on all fours, and he got on the other side of the door, and then he crawled out, and then he snapped back in behind the door. He said it looked like it was someone, a solid person, crawled out to look in the hallway to see who was in the hallway and then hid back behind. That's why he thought it was a real person, like, because we were hearing all these voices. He could have sworn someone was, like, checking to see where everybody was, like, snooping around. And he really, I mean, literally, he ended up going into the room on the other side of the doorway, looking in the trunk, make sure no one was hiding in the trunk. He couldn't believe it. I mean, he was really, he was dumbfounded over that. last Saturday, we just moved up from Rhode Island, and they were in Raymond's room. And in Raymond's room, there's this little room off of the room, and it's a room with no windows. I don't go back there. I think there's shutters back there. I don't go back there. But I know that there's a room with no room and no windows. And there's no cracks or outside light or anything else. And this man was sitting, the investigator was sitting at the desk in Raymond's room. And the danger door is there, the famous door that hit Jason and Grant on Sci-Fi Channel. And then there's that little pocket room back there that has no windows. He said it looked like someone was standing back there with a flashlight, holding the flashlight up to the ceiling because the light was streaming out over the top of the door. And he sat there for a while. He said it lasted about 10 seconds, 15 seconds. And then he thought, well, maybe there's someone outside walking around with a flashlight. And so then he went in the room and realized it was a solid cinder block room with no windows in it. There was no way there could have been any light source from anywhere.
Wow.
So that was really interesting. Disembodied voices, doors opening and closing right smack in front of you. Like double doors. You'll hear boom, 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 footsteps, and then the doors pop open, and all the windows are closed, and then they'll close, and then you'll say, oh my God, and can you close them? And they'll close them, you know? We have a phenomenon too, I can't explain. It looks like a strobe light. It will just flash. There'll be nobody around. You'll be in a room or walking towards, an area, and everyone, especially if I'm on the tour, everyone's behind me. I walk pretty fast. I'm usually pretty much ahead of everybody, or I'll be in a room with one other person, and we'll see it. And it looks like a strobe light. It comes from nowhere. There's nobody around. There's no one taking pictures. There's no one with a flashlight. It can be even during the day, and it'll be a strobe light that's so bright you don't even know where it comes from. It's an interesting phenomenon.
Wow. Man, it must, what you do is amazing, Keep doing what you're doing, and wonderful things will happen.
I hope you guys make it up here. I hope you guys make it up here.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I said I hope you all make it up here sometime. I hope you have a chance to make it up here sometime.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I'm actually looking for new locations and stuff like that. Oh, I was going to ask you, okay, so how many, you've been featured on a lot of shows, right, for Ghost Hunting?
Well, the building's been, they've used Rolling Hills for Sci-Fi Channel for Ghost Hunters. They've used it for Travel Channel's Ghost Adventures Paranormal Challenge. FX came here and did a promo, a six-show web series promo last year for their Asylum American Horror. American Horror Story Asylum series was a promo piece that they did for their website. It's been a few, some small, low-budget movies, a few little things here and there.
Now, do you obviously have internet there. Could people come and actually do, live investigations to the public?
We have had people do live investigations to the public. I do not have internet in the building, so you have to have your own Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've had live investigations on the internet. We've done live radio broadcasts. George and I have done a lot of dual spirit box sessions very successfully, from his backyard to my building and back and forth. Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. I would like to do some of those.
Yeah, they're fun. It worked really well. We just had Ghost Detectives come up, and they filmed a two-part show up here that just aired in Pennsylvania TV. So
nice.
On CW and on Fox. So
Very nice. Now, does that help when your stuff airs? Does it help get other people interested and wanting to come there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Good.
Shows are great.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's been your experience interacting with some of the people that work for the TV shows that come in there and do an episode from there?
What's my experience with them? I mean, they're all professionals. I mean, I work in the film business, so I get it. And so I understand the process. So, I mean, I understand the process. So, I mean, for me, it's kind of like, I mean, before I owned Rolling Hills, my very favorite job in the whole wide world was my years working in the film business. It was the best job I've ever, even though I love Rolling Hills, it was still probably the best job I ever had in the world. It really was. I love working in the film business. It's just really amazing. It was very fulfilling. I made damn good money back then. And, it was great. I loved it. So, I mean, I love having films here and television shows. It's like my old, you know, my old life from years ago. So that was fun.
Cool. Now, what do you, in general, and I'm sure you, because Facebook, here in the last year, it's gotten bad. What's your take on the whole generalized, the way the field is nowadays with all the drama going on?
I think that social media is a double-edged sword. I think that as far as the location goes, I have to be involved in social media. I think it makes it allows people to hide behind their computer screen and gives them free rein to be rude and cruel and nasty and vicious when it's unnecessary. And if they had to do it, stand up in front of somebody and say the same words, they wouldn't do it. And so I think it's a double-edged sword. I think it really can be very, I think it's detrimental in a lot of ways, not just in our field. I think all the way around. I think it allows people much too easily to become a cyber bully.
I agree.
And be critical. And read into things that may not even mean what they think it means. And, you know that yourself. You send a text, and maybe you're writing it back, and people that you can't read tone in an email. You can't read tone in a text or a post. And so something that could be very innocent gets misconstrued. And then you get, it's like a mob mentality. You know, one person says one thing negative, and then you've got, you know, everybody else wants to jump on the bandwagon just because there's strength in numbers. But, you know, if it came right down to it, if those same 100 people were standing in front of you, none of them would have the balls screaming into your face. So it's horrible. I think it's unfortunate. I think it's terrible. I think it's a double-edged sword. It really is. It's nice. It keeps us all connected. It makes the world smaller. It allows us to stay in contact with people that we may only see once or twice a year at best, you know, which is really lovely, too. But on the other hand, it can be heartbreaking and heart-wrenching and hurtful.
Yeah. I've been there.
I think we all have. I think we all have.
It sucks. It's bullshit.
Yep.
There's a lot of crap I could do without, you know.
No, it's really unfortunate, you know. It really is.
And you know what? I think that, like, you having a location, you get it a little bit harder. Like, before I did Paranormal Challenge, nobody knew who I was. I was, you know, just doing my own thing. Nobody bothered me. And there's this one location, and the owner would always tell me, like, how awful and toxic the paranormal people were. And I would always be like, I never have any problems. I don't know what you're talking about, you know? And then Paranormal Challenge hit for me, and people I didn't even know where all of a sudden, like, publicly online calling me a whore and shit, and I'm like, who the hell are you? And why are you talking about me like this? Because I have done modeling. Like, you're somebody who's been in TV. How many women have you met in modeling and, you know, that work in the entertainment business that are beautiful and intelligent? I'm sure you've met a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's just unfortunate that people have to, you know, cut people down to make themselves feel better. I mean, let's just step off of the paranormal world for a moment. The woman, I should know her name, the woman that swam across from, was it Cuba to Key West, and now everyone is like, you know, she did it. She's 60-something years old. And now all of a sudden people are criticizing her, saying that she, you know, she cheated by wearing the mask so she wouldn't get jellyfish stings in her face. Oh, my God. Really? Are you kidding me? I don't see you swimming with sharks going from Cuba to Key West. To help, can't you just celebrate the fact that this woman did it and just be happy for her? I wouldn't want to try doing that. That's a huge deal. And instead, you've got all these people that are coming out now and jumping on her case for every little nitpicky thing. Oh, she swam it so fast. You know, how'd she manage? Was she holding onto a boat? No. Well, they had to go back now, and they had to, again, verify stuff. And she has to defend herself by getting meteorologists and oceanographers, or whatever you want to say it, to talk about how the current happened to be moving very quickly in the direction of Key West, and she was riding the current in, which helped speed her up by 5 miles an hour. Whatever. It's the same thing that happens with everybody in any field now. Everyone has an opinion, and everyone questions everything. And if anyone does anything good, someone's going to try to find a hole in it. Someone's trying to, like, you know, bust your bubble. Whether, you know, you do something out of the kindness of your heart, they're going to make it turn around like you're benefiting by it somehow. And it's just, it's ridiculous. No one can do anything good anymore. No one can, you know, just live their life without someone coming in and ridiculing you. And it's sad.
It is. It's very unfortunate. And you're absolutely right. It's very toxic in some ways, and it is people sitting behind their computers doing this crap.
What happened to the old saying, the old adage, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all? Or, hey, guess what? I don't like this person and what they're saying, so guess what? I'm not going to be on their friends and say, well, I'm just going to delete myself and walk away. I don't need to listen to them or talk to them or be involved with them because they're not my cup of tea. What happened to just taking the high road? You know? And people just don't do that anymore. People just don't.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. There have been times, and I know that you can say the same, that you have had to throw the smack down at a time or few, here and there, because why the hell should you, why should you put up with this shit? You know what I mean? So then you got to go be a bitch, and you're like, fuck this. You know, I'm not going to put up with you, and I'm not going to put up with shit, so be gone. And then that person's, like, causing you hell, and it's like, you know what, I got rid of your ass for a reason. Just leave me the hell alone. But people can't take the high road. People want to go bash and slash and trash and, you know, I don't know. I'm the type that I just walk away quietly, you know. But if somebody wants to come and, like, rock and roll, then I say, let's do it, ma'am. Let's rock and roll. and then people come along and say, I'm going to destroy you. And I go, please do it so that I can move on with my day. Don't threaten me.
I know.
I
hear you.
Well, we have a caller on the line. He has a question. It's CPLB.
It's who?
CPR Dennis from Full Spectrum Radio. I'm going to put him on now. Dennis,
hey,
are you there?
Good evening, everybody.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Jody. Hi, Outlaw. Hi, Sherry. Nice to talk to you, dear.
Hi. How are you?
I am wonderful. I have a question. You had mentioned the strobe effect that has been caught in. Now, is it just in one room, one area, all over the location?
It's in several areas. It's concentrated, I would say, in three major areas. Although we have on occasion seen them in other areas, but primarily three major areas.
Okay. Has there ever been any equipment set up when it's gone off, like EMF meters or anything like that, to see if you can validate what realm it's actually changing?
Unfortunately, it happens in such a sporadic time frame that we never know when it's going to happen. And it seems to me that it happens when we're not prepared for it. I've been in one room. Seriously, I've been in this one particular room and happened to be looking out in the direction where we see it frequently. And, you know, I've got a group of people in this one room. We're doing whatever we're doing. And I'll look over, I'm like, oh, my God, there it is. You know, the other day, again, my volunteer and I were down in this one particular area. And I was fussing around with a lock, and he goes, oh, my God, I just saw the flash you told me about. I've never seen it before. You know, and I'm like, oh, great. You know, we were going down there to do work, not invest here. I mean, it's so random. Other times, like I said, I've been on tours, and everyone's behind me. And usually it's just as fine because I walk too damn fast, and I lose the group. And so I usually have to stop and wait for people, and I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm like, who? Is everyone behind me? Did somebody stay behind originally or take a picture? Where's everybody? Let me do a head count, you know? So it's usually one of those situations where we're not prepared. I mean, it would be lovely if we were, but we're not.
Yeah. Is it possible to, now I realize that would be a kind of a pain in the ass, but keep a ledger of, you know, weather conditions, humidity, you know, time of day, things like that, just to see if there's any correlation?
Yeah, we could do that, absolutely. As a matter of fact, in general, we have logbooks that one of my key volunteers, Scott Nash, from Momentum Paranormal, had put out in many areas of the building about 6-8 months ago, you know, with pens and said, hey, people, you know, when something happens in this area, can you make a note of it, put, you know, a date, time on it, your email, your, you know, if we can follow up with you, a phone number. Even if it didn't happen tonight, if it happened from a previous visit, kind of guesstimate when it happened. If we have one page in every book written in, we're lucky. People don't, they're not, again, going back to the whole thing about people don't share evidence and information. They don't share evidence and information.
Yeah, that's definitely intriguing. I mean, the first thought that I had was, of course, ball lightning, but, you know, that's pretty atmospherically controlled, so now I'm not real sure what the atmosphere is like.
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear what you thought it was at first.
But my first thought when you explained just a random flash here and there would be like ball lightning.
Yeah, no.
But that would, no. You know, you would pretty much have to have access to outside, and you know, that's strictly atmospheric, but if you're in a sealed area, yeah, that takes that one off the table.
Yeah, one area in particular this happens in, all the windows are blacked out. So,
yeah, definitely
and
peculiar.
And
that
yeah,
was my
another,
question. Was it,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's just, it's very startling. It's very surprising. And out of all the other locations I've ever been to, I've never seen anything like it. And I'm not saying that because I own Rolling Hills and I want people to roll in. I wish somebody else would tell me that they've had the same phenomena so we could start comparing notes. So, honestly, if anybody else has anything like that, and it's bright, it's not like a little pin light. It's not the size of, like, a golf ball. It is a bright strobe light effect. You know how I can describe it? If you ever watched any of the old black and white detective movies, and you got the old reporter and the gumshoe detective and the news reporter's got that big camera with the big round flash thing, and you got to change the bulb after every flash, and it's really bright and blinds you, it's like that.
Huh.
is really big.
Yeah, that would definitely be something I'd love to catch.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's funny because he's volunteered this far just Saturday night, actually. And I've been telling him about it for 6-8 months, and he never saw it. And he's never seen it. Never seen it. And it was probably about 5:30 in the afternoon. It was 6. It was 6 o'clock. We came to 6. We were right into this room, and I was trying to deal with one of the padlocks on the door. And so I was touching with the key, trying to find the right key. And he was like, oh, my God, I just saw the light. And it was very strange. And it's an area that happens frequently. Not frequently enough that I can, you know, like it's every week or every, you know, month or whatever, but it happens in that particular area quite a bit.
Yeah, so setting up DVR system would take, you know, God knows how long to catch it.
Well, that opens up another whole can of worms. In my experience of being here as long as I have and being in the building, you know, so many days a week and nights a week and everything else, dealing with so many teams. In my experience, I'm finding out that when teams set up DVRs, they get super quiet. If you go in with handheld stuff, people are getting evidence and within 3 to 5 minutes. DVTs, pictures, everything else, personal experiences. I've talked to a couple of other locations, and they're experiencing the same thing. I really believe that the constant stream of IR, the constant, steady 8, 9, 10 hours of constant IR is either hurting them or scaring them. I think it's hurting them, and it makes them scatter. And other locations are doing the same thing.
You know, and I find that that's interesting that you said that because in my investigations, in fact, one location in particular, because we have a medium on our team, and he was describing the spirits were not real happy that we were setting up the DVR. And he told me that as we were setting it up, and so I made a deal with them. I told them, I said, look, we're going to run this for a little bit, and then I'm going to turn the power off on it, and the second half of our investigation, we're not going to run it. We're going to give your house back to you. And as soon as I shut that thing off, things started happening. And then when we got back about 5 minutes after he had told me that the spirits were unhappy, because they could see the IR light, we were going through our evidence, and then we got an EVP of two spirits talking, and the first spirit said, where's the camera? And the second spirit says, it's over there. And the first spirit said, I'm out of here. So
I believe it.
Dangerous.
I really believe it.
Yeah.
I think
the IR lights blind them. I really do. We've caught some spirits commenting about how bright the light is. And we started doing a little bit more where we don't even turn on the IR lights at all, you know, just to see if we can capture EVP or they mess with our other pieces of equipment. And so far, so good. It's been successful.
Yeah, I mean, when teams come in for their quarantines and they want to set the DVRs, and I see that they bring them in, and as an owner, I watch the line where, you know, I want the team to do what they want. They pay for the night. I want them to do what they want. On the other hand, I want to make sure you have a great night. So, you know, I'll do the tour. I'll explain everything to them, and you know, then afterwards, you know, I'll tell them where they, you know, if they want to put their cameras, where they want to put it up. And then I'll tell them my opinion. And I said, you know, I'll support you whatever you want to do. You want to put them up? I'll even help you put them up. But you've got to make your decision. And, you know, if you really want to put them up, I'll suggest the same thing that you did. Maybe after half the night, if you're not getting any activity, shut them down. And you're going to see a dramatic difference. And they do. So some of the teams will take my advice, and they're happy that they did, and they don't even set up the camera. But I don't like to tell people what to do because you pay for the night. I want your team to have the experience that you want. But as an owner and someone that's here all the time, I'd be remiss in not giving you my honest opinion. And I let people make up their own decision. I mean, it's up to you guys. Whatever you want to do, I'm there for you.
Well, I guess we lost Dennis. Thanks, Dennis, for coming on.
Thanks,
he might have dropped the call.
Let's get on Facebook, Dennis. We can continue the conversation.
But yeah, and that's one thing I was going to ask. You know, with your background of being, you know, paranormal investigator, and being that's like a paranormal investigator's dream, in per se, is being in a location, you know, days in, days out, and being able to see the patterns. You know, different things that these spirits can do, you know, on a normal basis.
Yes, it's so interesting because you do get to know patterns of people. There's so many things that change when you're here on a daily basis, as far as even within yourself. Like, I've been noticing, I would say over the last year, there's differences in my vision now. And what I'm starting to notice, and it sounds odd, but it's almost like I'm starting to see, I don't want to say auras, because that's not really it. But I can, like, I will be looking, and I can kind of, you know, like heat waves, you know when you can see a heat wave? Like, it's really, really hot, and you can see a heat wave, like, over the tar. I'm starting to see things like that in the shape of people. And then I'll take a picture and there'll be something there. So that's an interesting twist. I don't know if my eyes are becoming, if my physical body is changing, or my physiological side is changing, or I'm getting more open to seeing things, or they're allowing me, or they're coming through differently for me to see them. But that's been kind of interesting over the last 6-8 months. But I've noticed that quite a bit. And it's kind of startling a little bit sometimes. Like, I'm sitting in a chair and I'm seeing somebody, a man walk in with a cane bent over, and I can see him pretty clearly with his profile. You know, and that's kind of unusual. The different noises that come through, you kind of know who it is. If doors start slamming in a certain area, you know who it is. And you'll say, hey, so-and-so, can you do it again? And we'll do it again. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. You see the patterns, the different smells. Different areas have completely different smells. It's interesting. It really is. And I know I'm very lucky. What I'm not lucky about is I have zero time to review audio. I have zero time, you know, to review any evidence. So a lot of times, unfortunately, when I'm in the building, I'm literally just going on personal experiences now, because there just isn't enough hours in the day for me to do what I want to do in the research area, you know, which is really sad. But I know more firsthand experiences, and I can share at least that with people to help them have a better investigation, I hope, you know, with telling them what's where and what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Now,
I need three animations. Can someone learn how to clone me, please?
Do what? What
did you say?
I said, I need someone to learn how to clone me. I need three of me. So can someone divide me up into three, figure out how to clone me, and then I have enough hours to do everything that I need to do? Or add another 12 hours on the day for me. That would be nice, too. You know what I want? I want Hermione Granger's time traveler twister necklace thing. I need one of those. So if someone can figure out how to make one for real, I'll be in good shape.
I know the feeling there. Now, October's coming up. Do what?
I said, you guys all think I'm joking. I'm dead serious. There's got to be somebody out there with a big brain who's inventing equipment that can figure this out. Come on. So, we should get Gary Gilka, Bill Chappell, you know, now all the other, you know, people out there that are inventing and tweaking equipment, and get them together, and they can make me a time machine or something.
Right.
I would love a time machine. Okay. Oh my gosh. Have you, in your area, do you know if there's a MUFON group?
There is a MUFON group, and It's so funny you should bring that up. I was just talking about the group to someone today. And trying to get the director out here because we see a lot of interesting things out this way.
Well, yeah, you know, I attend MUFONT meetings every month, and I have for a long time. And, you know, our group, sometimes we get kicked out of restaurants. You know, their lease will come up and they'll move, and then they won't let us into their new place because they may not have private rooms or whatever. But if I were you, I would try to get MUFONT in there and bringing their people in and having speakers in the MUFONT, like whoever's in charge of it. Sometimes they'll hire speakers through Skype, and they send around like a bucket, you know, to help, you know, raise some money and stuff like that for the group and also for the location.
Yeah, I was just talking to someone this afternoon about the local MUFON group and trying to get in touch and do something again with them. So it's just your timing is kind of funny because literally it was just a few hours ago. So.
You know what? And I'll tell you what. Like, if you are, you know, you're obviously somebody that's very passionate about this, I can tell you those MUFON meetings are really rewarding. They're really interesting to learn about, you know, the other side of the unknown. And you start to find out about some of the similarities with spirits. Like, you know, the abductee cases, they have a lot of people, you know, waking up and there was a dark shadow figure in my bedroom. You know, and it's like, well, we're seeing those in haunted locations. So what's going on there?
Oh, I agree. I mean, I used to go to Southern in California when I lived there. And unfortunately here, like I said, when I say I don't get a chance to get out of here, it isn't being facetious. I literally am here all the time. I mean, it's very difficult to even make time to go and, like I said, go into Batavia, which is 15 minutes away, to run and do some errands, go pick up, you know, prescription, go get shampoo, stuff like that.
Right.
I'm joined in a lot of meetup groups, including, you know, some that are MUFON based. Unfortunately for me, I have no time to get out to them. And yes, the only way I'm going to be able to get any opportunity is to bring them here. And so it's funny, we were just talking about that earlier today, seriously. So it's definitely your timing is kind of eerie in a good way.
It's a sign.
Yeah, maybe it's a sign it's going to happen, which would be great. Because I sit around with the attendees, you know, I always like, I'll quiz people on certain things that I see in the building that they may not know what it is. And I'll joke with them. I'll say, you know, you guys are my only entertainment. So when you say something wrong, yeah, I'm going to laugh at you because you're the only fun I have. You know, and I'll tease them and they'll like, they'll come up with some silly answers and things for stuff. So yeah, I mean, unless I bring people here, I don't get out. So I'm all for that. And I do agree with you 1,000%. There are a lot of similarities. People don't realize it. I like to say that there's more interdimensional situations going on in the paranormal rather than just spirit activity and people aren't aware of it.
Yeah. There's a lot, to it. It's interesting, though.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating, the MUFONT meetings, though. I mean, you get to learn about conspiracies and, you know, just stuff with the government, and it just makes it eerie. And, you know, I bet the people who do the UFO meetings, they would get a kick out of doing it in a haunted location. You know, it would bring that creepy factor.
Well, and I think they'd be surprised if some of the activity that we have would actually fall into some of their research. I mean, like you said, the shadow man with the hat has been well documented in the UFO community. Those flashes of light could possibly be doorways or portals opening to interdimensional beings. We have someone that shows himself to us, and we get photographs of them, and I hate to say it. No, I don't hate to say it. People are going to hate to hear it. I don't care. It looks like a reptilian. Very clear as a bell with oval black eyes on the side of his head.
And I'm not trying to scare anybody. I mean, I just think that the world, the paranormal world, every type of the world is a lot bigger place than what we know. I think that there are a lot of dimensions that we're dealing with that the average paranormal investigator doesn't want to either think about or doesn't know about or doesn't want to accept. And
yeah.
I think we're limiting ourselves in really furthering this field by having blinders on and not looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely. Maybe we should bring a book on it back here, Jody.
You know what? That would be so freaking awesome. I love being a part of MUFON. I'm not like a member, but I am like, you know, I signed up with them and I get newsletters and I go to the meetings every month and it is a blast. I mean, there are some times where it's just entertaining and I walk out of there and go, okay, I'm normal. I got this, you know, because I feel.
I've gotten so many photographs over my lifetime of, again, I'm going to be thrown under the bus. And I don't really care because I know what I have. And I've shown to other people that have seen it, and it doesn't matter what people think. I've got full-on gray aliens in pictures. I've seen with my own eyes with people out here, just random attendees, when I brought them outside to use the porta potty, we've seen triangular black craft, weird lights in the sky. George and my sister just saw lights in the sky when they were here that changed and moved and changed shape and color. And then took off. I mean, I've been around that kind of stuff a long time, and I believe in it. When I was up in Mount Washington for a darkness radio event, I've got photographs and videos of something that I don't even want to begin to describe because people won't even believe until they see it in the sky. And it's just a lot of different things. And I really do think that the whole crux to us figuring out at least one more piece to the puzzle is looking to the whole pie and not just a little slice that we are all focusing in on. Have you ever read the book? Have you read the book, Search for Skinwalker?
No.
Or The Hunt for the Skinwalker? It's about the ranch out in Utah. You got to read it.
I have heard about that place, yes, but I didn't read the book.
You have to read the book. I just saw George Knapp talk about it. He's one of the co-authors. You have to read the book. I have to read the book.
Over the summer, I went to Keith Age's event, Mid-South, and I was driving, and literally I saw a light fly across the sky and then just disappear. And then, like, 15 minutes later, I saw another white light fly up in the sky and then just disappear. And the first thing I did was, like, look at my clock to make sure I did not have any missing time.
Right. Good idea.
And I'm like, okay, what time is it? Okay, we're all good here. But I had never seen lights like that before, and it was pretty trippy. Like, what was that? What was that? Like, those weren't shooting stars where they trickle off and sizzle off, you know?
No,
there was no, it just, like, a big white light, bright, and then it just disappeared.
Yeah, I wish I could have seen it. I mean, I am totally interested in all that. We keep saying, you know, we want to have a night out here and bring out all a bunch of telescopes and you know, it's just... Things haven't fallen into the right timeline for that, but
can I ask, like, how like the land around your building? Are you like, do you have land around it?
I have 11.5 acres, and then next to me, bordering my property, is the Genesee County Park. But that land used to be all the original land of the property, and so was the land across the street on both sides. So all the land around me is farmland or the park, but it was originally the original land to the property.
Overall, is it pretty dark? Like, are there street lights? Is there an area where there's, like, no lights?
Pitch black. pitch black.
Really?
People are always commenting about, oh my God, we never see the stars like this in the city. It's pitch black.
You should definitely call whoever your MUFON group is around you and tell them to create some events for them next summer, because you will get people out there sitting outside and with their night vision goggles and checking the skies out, and that would be really fun. You could have speakers.
Oh, I think it'd be wow.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun.
I mean, it was really interesting to get someone to build. I can't remember what it's called. There's one in California, and it's I can't remember what it's called. But basically, it's like a little observatory of some sort, and I can't remember. There's a special word for it, and I'm drawing a blank. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely worth studying out here. I mean, there are some things I would love to share with you, but I'm not going to share it on there because people already think I'm a crackpot, and I don't need to give them any more food for thought. But there's a lot of stuff that I've experienced and or seen in my lifetime that could be very surprising to people.
People
just need to be a little bit more open-minded. And, I'm sure you said it yourself, and luckily a lot of the people in the paranormal at least are a little bit more open-minded to this, but we'd all have to be very, very naive and conceited to think we're the only people in the whole, big, wide universe.
I believe we all are in the field for a reason. We had experiences. We had things that kind of led us to trying to find answers. And, we're all kind of seeking those answers.
That's true. Just a little trivia note. Really doesn't mean anything, but it's kind of a little quirky thing. I was born, half a mile down the road from Alan B. Shepard, who was in a very famous astronaut. And I in New Hampshire also, I was born not too far away from where Betty and Barney Hill, the first abductees.
How far away?
So, I mean, I've been interested in all kinds of paranormal and UFO stuff all my life.
I think that if you open your doors to getting them to come in and contributing, obviously, so that, your building is coming of use, I think that you will really find their meeting really rewarding.
Oh, I would. I know I would. Absolutely.
Yeah. It just opens whole new doors that you're like, what? Is this true? I'm really good friends with George Norrie. Do you know who he is from Coast to Coast?
Oh, I absolutely do. Yeah, I do. I would love to talk to him, actually.
Yeah. So he lives here in St. Louis, so I go out and I meet him for drinks and stuff like that. And, when I go to a MUFON meeting, I come home and I start texting him, and I'm like, all right, George, I just heard about this conspiracy. Is it true? And he'll come back and be like, it's not, it doesn't matter what I think. Well, Jody, it matters what you think. And it's like, come on, George. And then he'll be like, go listen to this episode, on Coast to Coast. And I'll go listen to it. And I'm like, oh, geez. And I come back and I'm like, so do you believe his story? He's just like, it doesn't matter what I believe, Jody. I'm just like, oh. But
he sounds like a psychiatrist.
We talk about stuff though, and he's great.
Yeah, he'd probably be very surprised with some of the stuff I have on photograph. I have to tell you, can I tell you one thing real quick about Linda Vista Hospital? You'll find this interesting. I was in our investigation, and a bunch of us were staying. When you first come in, and there's that I'll call it a reception area on your right, that counter. Okay. We're all sitting in front there at the end of the evening. We're doing a spirit box session. And there were two voices coming through. And there was a man and a woman. And the woman goes, do you see them? And the man goes, I see them. And the woman goes, don't shoot them. And he goes, why not? She says, it's first. I have the record.
What did it say?
It says the man.
The last part,
says,
when you said, you.
Don't shoot them. She said, don't shoot them. He said, why not? She goes, it's earth.
Weird.
That's very weird.
You know, I had a really freaking weird experience there, and that place is on my number two favorite places I've ever been. I got a clear as day EVP of me, you know, and I said, what's your name? And it said, Michael. And I've talked to other groups that have gotten Michael EVPs there as well. But, you know, Linda Vista is actually the only place that I ever felt like something evil.
Huh.
I felt something that was evil. And not necessarily demonic, but like if it was a human spirit, it was a nasty thing in life, you know? That's the vibe I got, like just nasty, downright nasty. And I stopped myself and because I was walking and I like just walked into a presence like that I just didn't like. So I stopped, backed up, asked somebody to come with me, and that person ended up getting hurt as soon as they came up to about where I felt it. They got hurt, and but I felt it. There was a lot of touching for us and pulling of the hair.
Huh.
What about for you?
I didn't get any touching or pulling of the hair. I got a lot of interesting pictures. We got the apparition that walked into the wall, and it was like a solid man wearing scrubs, looking at like a clipboard. Pretty creepy. There was a lot of down in the, I don't remember what the room is called, but actually, you know, down with like the furnace room is, where they have that little area where you open up the door and all the ashes is in the furnace there. I don't know what you call it. It's way down one of the tunnels, and then there's a big furnace maintenance room. The maintenance guy was really talkative to me, like really talkative, and saying things to my husband at the time about me and, like, trying to get me to go upstairs with him. And down in that other big area, it's like you go, I can't remember how you get there now, it's been so long, but there's another big area. If you go right, you go down towards this maintenance boiler room. You go left, so down a big ramp to a big, huge, cavernous room. And then there are all these other little rooms off of it. It's like underground. That was a really creepy area. That was the place I didn't like. There was something weird going on in the stairwell and that whole area. There was some nice and good stuff there.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It was an interesting place. But that I'll never forget that session, that spirit box session. Clear as a bell, have it recorded, on tape. Under jaw on my laptop, and it was just the creepiest ass thing. So I thought, that is really odd.
Well, one question I have left about your building.
Sure.
How is the spirit box at your building?
We use it quite a bit. We get a lot of great results. As I said, I do a lot of dual spirit box sessions with George. And we've had great success doing really interesting experiments, actually. We'll put someone, I have two Frank's boxes, they're Frank's boxes, and I'll use a Frank's box down in Shadow Hallway, and we'll put someone way up in the west wing, up in Emma's room, or we'll have one down in the basement of the kitchen and someone way up in the west wing in Emma's room, and we'll send messages down, back and forth to the spirit box. We'll have whoever we're talking to in the spirit box, to the spirit box, send like code words down to the other people that are using the spirit box in the other location, and they'll do the same, and we'll get a lot of we'll get them to do that. It's really interesting. Or we'll have someone that we're trying to do through the spirit box go up to wherever the other people are and touch the investigator, either tap them on the head or tap them on the knee, and they don't know we're going to do this. And
right.
then later on we'll say, did anything physical happen to you up there? And they'll say, well, I felt this, blah, 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 and it'll be exactly what we asked them to do. So we have very good luck with the spirit box. I love spirit box sessions.
Yeah, I have a crazy spirit box.
I heard it.
I don't play with it very much because it trips me out. It gets personal with me. It's personal.
Yeah, some of them do. I mean, it really depends on who's coming through. You know, Roy comes through a lot, and when he starts sharing his voice, he's like a little girl because I love hearing his voice. And then, you know, we'll get random people coming through. We get a lot of people that are talking over each other because they're waiting in line to talk. There's one spirit that doesn't like me too much. He's pretty. He's got trouble. He's there for the drugs. He's told us so. I yelled at him once, not knowing. It was right in the very beginning, and I should have been more patient with him. And he'll tell me every name in the book. So he's not so happy with me. We've had interesting things with the spirit box. We've had, you know, when we've had attempted break-ins and things or break-ins, we'll do spirit box sessions, and they'll give us the make, model, color of the car, number of doors on the car, and a partial license plate. They'll give it to the state police, and they'll text the people. There's still a state trooper, Jenny, who drives through here. She does her rounds, and if she sees me, she still stops me every single time. I cannot believe that we got that information from the spirit box. So
yeah,
I
that's
love it.
Crazy.
I love it. Wow. I mean, it's just, you know, it's one of my favorite things to do.
You know, I think more research needs to be done on those pieces of equipment. I don't think that those really have been researched the way that they need to be.
I agree. It's, you know, I don't know if it's really... I don't even know how to do. I'm not a technical person. I mean, I'm not electronically savvy. I'll be the first to admit it. I couldn't explain how a television works if my life depended upon it. I turn it on and it works and I'm happy to see the show. That's all I know about. Same thing with the radio. Turn it on, the music comes through, yeah. Couldn't tell you how it really works. So I'm the worst person to say, you know, to even have this conversation with. But But I do, you know, I do my part where, you know, we try to do verifiable information, we try to do repetitive answers, we try to do, you know, sending the messages back and forth. But as far as what how the technology actually works, I agree. I think that, you know, there's a key there. There's a reason why it's working, and it's, I don't understand it. And I hope, you know, the people that do understand it, that work on making this equipment, like Gary Delta and, you know, Frank Sumption. And I, you know, I'm very interested to see the next piece of technology that is tied to that. I know Frank's working on something that has a visual, which would be phenomenal. To have a visual and a voice coming through at the same time. Oh my God. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
yep.
It looks like we are past our time, and it's been a pleasure, and you know, I might talk to my camera guy and say, hey, let's freaking go on a trip. I might blow through your town sometime.
Hey, great. That was awesome. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. And you know
yeah,
what?
No
I hope that you follow through with getting MUFON in there. I really think you'll enjoy just opening up that door and meeting more people. You're going to meet more people, and you're going to learn some cool stuff.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Like I said, literally, just have a conversation, not like 6 hours ago. So timing is spot on, girl.
Yeah. Well, what's your website? And if you want to plug anything before we shut it down?
It's www.rollinghillsasylum.com. And the official Rolling Hills Asylum Facebook page, and we're doing all hunts and tours this October. No haunted house. Taking a break from that because people were complaining that they weren't getting an opportunity to come in and do straight on hunts and tours in October. So first year I'm here, I'm doing all Hudson tours in October, so.
Nice. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Sharon.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me on, and I appreciate the time so much.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful to meet you and talk to you. And good luck with everything.
Thank you. I hope to talk to meet you both very soon.
Yes.
All right.
Wonderful. All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye. All right. That
nice.
Was Sharon Coyle from Rolling Hills Asylum.
I'm so glad I got to meet her. Thank you so much for setting that up and bringing her to the table.
Well, yeah, you know, and not only to help her facility out, you know, because you and I are fans of old locations, but the other side of it is, locations that you haven't been to, and because I know you like going to these public locations, so gives you an opportunity to.
I'm a sucker. You know what?
I know.
I'm like Sharon, where you go in and you just see, you see something in these places, and you want to help them. You want to do something for. You want to do everything. You just want to see everything done, you know, for them to run it, continue running it. I think there needs to be more funding for these buildings, and it upsets me.
Yeah.
But, you
definitely.
Know, kudos to the people who are keeping them alive and giving them their all.
Yeah. And another one for your bucket list, you know. You got to talk to the owner of Rolling Hills, so you'll have to go up there sometime.
Yeah, I might have to go up and check that out.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Just might have to.
You
do
got
that.
A song? You got a song picked out for us?
I do. You know, I don't know if I've played it before, but you can never go wrong with some of this.
Right.
But you know
what?
I use more of this, but in different songs. Okay.
All right. Well, good night, everybody.
Good night.
I'm in first place. I don't support the team. I can't take direction, and my socks are never clean. Teachers dated me. My parents hated me. I was always in a fight because I can't do nothing right.